Today, our guest is a thriving college student, author, and advocate for people around the world. But at the beginning of her 16th year, yes, she was your average teenage girl, school sports boyfriend, but then everything changed. Hello, everyone. My name is Pamela Brewer, welcoming you to this edition of Mind Talk. And I'm very pleased to introduce to you today's guest, Kylie Brookbank, or Smiley Kylie, as she used to be called. Hi, Kylie. How are you?
Hi, I'm good.
Now, Kylie, you have written a book that is entitled Beautiful Scars, A Life Redefined. That's an interesting title. Let's talk about what life was like for you at the age of 16.
So at 16 years old, I was your normal teenage girl. You know, went to school, worried about my schooling and my friends and nothing really major in life. And one day I went home from school and my daily routine was to let the dogs out. So I took care of the dogs and I smelled something just really terrible in the bathroom. And I was like, okay, maybe I'll just light a candle and be able to cover up the smell. But when I lit the candle, everything blew up. So that was just the whole entire house blew up. The lighter blew up in my hand, and I really had no idea what was going on.
So when you say everything blew up, you are very serious. Everything literally blew up. House blown up, house essentially gone.
Yes. Everything was just, everything immediately caught on fire, and that was me included.
So that's, I mean, I just can't even imagine how scary that would be and what you were even thinking in that moment. You ran out of the house, yes? Well, what was left of the house. And what happened then? What do you remember of what happened?
So after I knew that it blew up, I knew something didn't feel right because I immediately felt hot air on my face or something that felt hot. So after that, I'm not sure what happened, but I think I hit my head on the toilet or the ground or something, and I was probably knocked out for a few seconds. I have no idea how long, but I woke up to my dog barking at me, and we ran out of the house together and ran over to my neighbor's house, and that's where they called my parents and 911.
So it sounds like your dog was really an important part of your survival in that moment.
Oh yeah, he, if it weren't for him, I don't know if I would be here today.
Well, what's the name of this savior on four legs?
His name is Digger.
And is Digger still with you today?
Yes, he is.
That's wonderful. You, in your book, Beautiful Scars, you talk about being in an ambulance and you really couldn't feel anything. You knew that there was a whole lot of stuff going on around you, but you weren't sure why. And then all of a sudden you were in a helicopter.
Yes. Once I got into the ambulance, they were like cutting my clothes off of me and like putting needles all over the place. And I had no idea. I thought that something felt off, but I couldn't tell what it was. Nobody really could tell what it was, but I went into this ambulance and they took me to meet a helicopter, and then in the helicopter they wrapped me up in like blankets and stuff, and it was just a very strange experience because I had no idea what was going on. Nobody was really telling me what was going on, and as far as I knew, I was just going to the hospital. I didn't know if it was like a major injury or if anything was really wrong because I couldn't feel. It was like the adrenaline was just pushing out all of my feelings. So I had no idea what was going on.
You know, it's extraordinary to really think about truly, literally, how life can really change in an instant. And that's exactly what it did for you. At one minute, you were 16 years old, going to school, doing what 16-year-olds do with school, girlfriends, boyfriends. And then you're home, and all of a sudden, your entire life is now changed literally forever and literally changed.
Yes, it was completely a huge change in my life and my whole entire family's life because the place that we called home was now gone and also I was in very bad shape. So it was a very tough time for my family and I.
Well, when you say that you were in very bad shape, you are not exaggerating by any stretch. 45% of your body was burned, as I understand, and with 20% of your body suffering third-degree burns, 25% second-degree burns, almost every part of you. It's hard to imagine.
Yeah, it was all over, and it wasn't just like one consistent spot. It wasn't just like my legs or something. It was literally all over my body, and it was just scattered. So, yeah, it was a lot that I had to go through, but I was in Shriners Hospitals for Children in Cincinnati, and that's where I stayed for 38 days. And they did an incredible job, and that's how I got to where I am today. I'm able to do everything that I was able to do before. And, yeah, it was just it without the help of my family and Shriners, I don't think I would be here today.
Well, you know, I looked a little bit into the Shriners Hospital for Children in Cincinnati, and they've been doing this kind of work since 1968, where they have been delivering expert and life-changing, truly, care to children and families with burns, plastic surgery needs, and complex wound and skin conditions. So I want to ask you about their statement that they deliver life-changing care to children and families. Typically, when a child is in a hospital, they go to the hospital, their parents are there for a little bit, but then their parents go home and then come back. But was that the case for you at Shriners in Cincinnati?
Not at all. Shriners in Cincinnati, they have what they call a family care unit. And that's where, like, the whole, it's a huge, like, almost like a hotel, but it's free for the parents and families of the patients. And they're able to stay there throughout the entire stay of their child or relative. And that was really cool because my parents and my whole family was there. My brother was there some when he didn't have to go to school. And it was just really important to have my family close by, because if they weren't at the hospital with me, it would have felt like I was doing all of it on my own, which I wouldn't have been. But it was very helpful to have the family care unit, because they were so close to me, and they were literally sleeping like on the other side of the hospital. So it wasn't like a hard thing to get to see them or anything like that.
And it seems as though it took you a while to really figure out or to understand what had actually happened to you and how much of your body was actually harmed in the fire.
Yeah, I was very heavily sedated. So I don't remember a whole lot of the hospital. And what I do remember, I remember the first night getting there, and that really closes out like right after that. After that night, I don't remember much, but I don't remember when I realized that I had been burned badly. I think that I realized it when I got to the hospital. All these doctors and nurses and everybody, there was probably 20 to 25 doctors and nurses frantically moving around me, and I was just laying there. I had no clue what was happening. Nobody had really talked to me. And my dad came in. He was the first one to be able to come back into the room, and he kind of told me that something wasn't right, and he still didn't know either what was going on, but he knew something wasn't right, and he kept assuring me that we would be okay. It was just, we didn't know where things were at that moment.
And in fact, as you describe the experience, and you and your mom actually authored Beautiful Scars, you talk about the fact that they sort of stripped away the skin and damaged tissue. Tell us a little bit about that process.
So before you can have skin grafts put on your skin, they have to scrape off all the dead skin or old skin or bad skin, because you can't put it on top. You can't put new skin on top of that. So one of the procedures before the actual skin grafting procedure is to have all of that removed. And I think my mom talked about it in our book. one night, I think it was that same night, the night that I got into the hospital, the doctor came out after he had like kind of assessed what was wrong, what the extent of my injuries were. And he had like blood and skin pieces all over his coat. And like, my mom talked about that in the book, just because that was the first night and that was the first time they met my doctor, and he was covered in like my skin, which was kind of concerning to my mom.
That would be concerning to anyone. It's almost impossible to imagine that someone could go through that and actually live through that, and particularly so young, at the age of 16. And again, I can only imagine what your parents were going through as they were seeing all the pain that you were in and all the damage that had been done by the fire.
Yeah, my parents, my whole family, really. I don't remember a whole lot of the hospital, so they do. And that's very hard for them because they remember seeing me at like the worst time in my life, and I don't remember it at all. So I can't compare my experience to theirs.
Of course.
But they've always talked, we've been very open about the whole situation, and they always talked to me about how, when I was in the hospital, how they felt. And that's really important because they matter too, and they remember everything, and I don't. So it's very important to have that conversation with each other. But they always told me, my mom always told me especially, that she had the hardest time because nobody knew what was happening in the beginning. And once we found out what was happening, I didn't know, but they did. So they knew that I was not okay, or not fully okay, and they wanted to help me, but they couldn't. So they just had to stand by and watch me be in excruciating pain. And I think that really hurt all of my family.
Of course. It's the worst thing in the world for a parent to see a child in pain. And then, I mean, that's bad enough. But then to know that there's nothing that the parent can physically do about it, it's just, you can't even put words into that kind of pain for a parent. What do you remember about the surgeries that took place while you were at Shriners for 38 days? That's amazing.
I remember bits and pieces. So I think this was the first surgery, but I remember like being taken back to the operating room and my whole family being around me, like making sure that I knew everything was going to be fine, even though they didn't even know it for themselves. But I remember mostly after the surgery. So most of the pieces that I can remember are afterwards, after the surgery. But I remember like, after the cleaning surgery, I remember lying there, like, they have to put these, like, Velcro suits on you, so it's, like, they pump water into those Velcro suits so that you don't get infected, because they wait a day to do the next surgery. So I remember that part, and I remember after my last skin grafting surgery, I can remember a lot of that, because they were starting to wean me off the medications. I could remember trying to stretch my arms and my hands and basically my whole entire body, just because it was so tight after being skin grafted. But I don't remember a whole lot of it. I just remember bits and pieces.
You know, it's interesting. In your book, you talk about the stark difference between the freedom of turning 16 and the big deal in your life is getting your driver's license and hanging out with your friends. And then after the fire, you could barely get to the bathroom unassisted. Such a huge change in such a short period of time.
Oh, yeah. Every kid dreams of being 16 years old and being able to drive themselves places and feeling that sense of freedom for the first time in their life. And I had just felt that, and I was hoping to keep feeling that. But after the accident, it was like completely reversed. Like, I couldn't drive because I couldn't barely walk. I couldn't even like open a door or brush my teeth or go to the bathroom. I couldn't do anything on my own. So the basic things that I always took for granted every day, I couldn't do. And then even on top of that, I couldn't have my same sense of freedom that I had before. So it was a very tough time for a 16-year-old.
I would think that there were days when you were really feeling depressed, really feeling down about and scared, I would imagine.
Yes, there were so many days where I would look at my parents and I'd be like, why did this have to happen? Like, I was in the hospital for so long that I, and the parts that I do remember, it was just, it was so hard because I would always ask my parents, like, why did this have to happen? I don't understand. And eventually I became able to understand, but when you're going through it, you just don't think about the end of the road. You think about what's going on in that moment, and it's just very, very difficult, especially for someone as young as I was. And it was just, it was a very tough time.
And you know, there's some questions for which there simply are no answers. And why did this happen is clearly one of those questions. And that's frustrating because you want to make sense of it and there's no sense to be made.
Yes. And it was especially frustrating then because I was going through it still. So there was absolutely no way that there could be an answer for why it happened so soon after it happened. Eventually, like right now, I understand that it happened. Everything happens for a reason. I know that that happened so that I can be able to, you know, do good and spread the word for Shriners. And I don't know, just kind of be an inspiring person for other people who might be going through tough times. And I know that now, but going through it was very hard to realize.
You know, you talk about being in the hospital for 38 days, and nowadays, if somebody is in the hospital for 3 days, it's huge. And if they're in there for 5 days, then it's really clear that there's something really serious going on. And good news, bad news, I mean, that just simply is the case. So to contrast that up against being in the hospital 38 days, again, it's something that I'm sure our listeners, I mean, you know, you try to wrap your head around it, but it's almost impossible.
Yeah, it was very shocking, I think, for my entire family and myself, because you never think that anything's going to happen to you, and you especially never think that you're going to have to stay in the hospital for over a month. And, you know, you hear people say that they've been in the hospital for like a week or so, and you're like, wow, that's a long time. And I never thought that I would be one of those people to say that I had been in the hospital for over a month, and I still wasn't completely recovered.
And during this month, your entire family had the option of staying at the hospital with you?
Yes, and they did. Most of them stayed there with me.
So that sounds like an incredibly expensive endeavor.
You would think so, but Shriners hospitals are completely donation-based. So they don't make the parents of the patients or the families of the patients pay a dime. They pay absolutely nothing, and Shriners covers all the costs for you.
You know, that, again, there's just so much that's so extraordinary about all the things that you've experienced. And certainly a 38-day stay in the hospital at no cost. I know that there's nobody listening who can really wrap their minds around that. Kylie, we're going to take a break. And when we come back, we're going to continue with what you went through. And we're going to pick up with what life was like when you finally left the hospital and went home. We'll be right back. talk to us about the day that you were actually released from the hospital. Do you remember what was going on for you and what kinds of thoughts you were having?
I remember everything from the day that I got home. My family helped me gather all my things together, and it was basically the cards and the letters and all the decorations that people had left me. We packed all that up, but before I could go home from the hospital, I had to prove to the doctors and the nurses that I was ready to go home. So they made me do things like put my clothes on by myself, walk down the hallway and like do exercises like that. They had me do a lot of things before I could leave. And finally that day came where I was like, yes, I'm going home. And that was really, really special day for me and my family, because we could finally start finishing this journey in a comfortable place and not in the hospital. So we went home, and that day we passed our old house, the house that had caught on fire, because it was right across the street from the rental house that we decided to rent.
It was right across the street.
Yes, it was right across the street. And that day I saw the house for the first time. Nobody had been showing me pictures or anything. They just thought that it would be better to protect me, kind of. So I requested to see the house, and they said, well, we're going to have to pass it anyways. So I saw it, and surprisingly, I didn't have any really serious emotions about it. I saw it, and I thought to myself, wow, that's incredible that I got out of the house. But it wasn't anything that was like super, super special, just because I knew that it couldn't have been good. And I knew that I wasn't expecting anything to be like salvageable out of the house. So seeing it was just like, wow, I made it out of there. And then that was it.
But you say that the home that you rented was actually across the street. So I is that correct?
Yes, it is.
So I would think that even as you were leaving out, or your folks were leaving to go someplace, that the house would be a constant reminder. No?
We were scared that that might happen, but I was fine with it, and my parents were fine with it. These people who rented this house to us, they had been trying to sell it for a while, and they just kind of wanted to help us out because they knew that we literally didn't have a place to go. So they told us that they would take the house off the market, and my parents felt like that was important, and we couldn't just pass up that opportunity because we had no idea where else we were going to go. So I think after we had a conversation about it, we all felt that it was okay and that we weren't going to just keep dwelling on it. And really, now looking back on it, I don't know that I ever paid attention that the house was across the street. And it took them maybe 2 to 3 months to tear the house down. So in those 2 to 3 months, I don't think anybody ever really noticed that it was there.
It's interesting. And, you know, I think about, we've been talking about certainly the disruption in your life of being in the hospital and then coming out and then, you know, literally living across the street from the horror of an exploded home. But then I also think about your parents. I mean, they had work, they had lives, your brother, all of that was disrupted as well as everyone came together to support you as you were going through a horrific and long healing process.
Oh, yeah. And that was one of the hardest things for my parents, because my dad had to leave work, and my stepmom, she was going back and forth driving over an hour, probably over 2 hours every single day from the hospital back to her work. And that was really tough on her. And then on my mom, thankfully, my mom owns her own business. So her employees kind of cover her spot for her. And same with my stepdad. But for my brother, it was extremely difficult because he was going to school an hour away from the hospital, and he couldn't stay there every single night. So he had to basically live with my aunts every other week that he would decide which place he was going to go to. And it was like he didn't have a home either. and his parents weren't anywhere around to kind of help him through the situation. So I think that he struggled with that very, very badly, because he had really, his parents were gone, his sister was gone, and his house was gone. So he was going through probably just as much as I was.
And, you know, it's interesting because so many times when, just as human beings, when we hear about a tragedy that has struck one person, the tendency is to focus on that one person and what he or she is going through. And it's to really not really pay attention to all the people around who, quite frankly, are experiencing so much of the same trauma, but may not feel as though they have a right, and I'll put that in quotes, to experience the trauma and to reach out for help in the way that the person who was harmed really can and so often does. So it's important for those who are listening to really recognize that it's not just when one person is harmed, it's that one person and it's everybody within that person's circle of friends and family as well.
Oh, yeah. My brother, he will still admit to this day that he struggled with it. And I think that still him thinking about it, he struggled with it. And that was one of the main problems that my mom had while she was in the hospital with me, because she knew that she had to be there for me because I was her child and I was going through a lot more than she ever could imagine. But at the same time, her other kid was struggling, but she couldn't be there for him like she was for me, because my brother even said he tried to push himself off because he knew what I was going through and he knew that it wasn't good. So he would always tell everybody that he's just not even paying attention. He just tried not to let anyone pay attention to him because he knew how much I was going through.
You know, the other important aspect that you bring to our attention, if you will, is so many people's lives are blended families. And so often the myth about blended families is that nobody can talk to anybody and it's just all kinds of chaos. But clearly, your mom and your mom's spouse and your dad and his spouse that all came together. It was one big family surrounding you and supporting you and each other.
Oh, yeah, that, and it's actually really cool because from that, I mean, they had always been acquaintances. I mean, they talked just because they had to, because they had one huge thing in common and that was their kids. But now, after the accident and after they basically stayed in the same place for so long, they were in the hospital right down the hallway from each other, and they had to go through it together. So I think from that, they now today, my mom works with my stepmom, and my stepmom brings my little sister with my dad to their office. And it's just really cool because since then, they have come so close together that we do things, we go out to dinner, and like it's just a really cool family dynamic that most people think that it's just impossible to have.
But clearly not. So that is an important part of your story as well. When you first returned home, though, you had to learn how to do everything, literally putting on your shoes, makeup. You had to learn everything anew.
Yes, and that was almost as hard as going through the hospital itself, because in the hospital, people do everything for you because they know that you can't do it for yourself. But after you get home, you're expected to do all these things that you were once able to do, but really you can't do it. I couldn't open doors by myself, and there were just so many things that I had to relearn how to do, and there were things that people just take for granted every day, like walking and just going up and down steps and putting on your clothes. And it was a huge struggle, but that's where my family came in and they helped me a lot with that. And my family, my parents even stayed off of work for probably at least a month or two after I got home from the hospital, just to give me some extra support for that tough time.
So again, it's certainly a story of extraordinary tragedy, but it's also a story of extraordinary coming together and love and support from all the people involved in your life. Are you now surgery free?
I am completely surgery free, and I don't have to have any more ever, ever again.
This is a good thing. I think you've probably had your fill with surgery.
Oh, yeah.
When you went home from the hospital and you were learning your life anew and reconnecting, I would think, with friends anew, you got a phone call one day and you weren't quite sure that it was a real call from some guy who said he was a doctor.
Yeah, he had tried to reach out to a couple different people that were close to me and me. I didn't know that it was like a real thing. And he had said that he was a producer on the Doctors TV show in LA. And my mom and I just kept thinking, like, there's no way this can't be real. Like, how would this person know who I am? They're all the way in LA. Like, that's not even close to Ohio. So we thought about it for a little bit and we were like, okay, we'll just have a phone call conversation with him and see what happens. And we called him on a Sunday evening. And he told us that night, he said that we could come, and it was a real thing. Like, he wasn't just fooling with us or anything. And he said, within the next 2 days, we should be flying out. So they flew us out within 2 days, and we were in LA and going on a TV show. And I don't think that my mom was super happy about it, because I was still going through a ton of recovery and therapy. And we had to like get clearance from the doctors at Shiners that I could even be on an airplane or traveling at all. So it was a huge deal, and I didn't see it that way, because I was like, wow, this is a TV show. Like, they're interested in me. And I just thought it was cool. So I convinced my mom that we should go. So we went, and it was an incredible experience. The doctors really are truly amazing people, and they're just on TV. So it was just a super cool experience for me and my family and my parents, because we went there when I was in a very low time, and from leaving there and going back home, I felt like I had kind of my spirits lifted and I could actually get back to my old self again.
So it had a huge positive impact on you.
Yes, it did. And the main reason for that was because the doctors decided to do a little bit of their own research. And while I was in the hospital, my friends kept posting on social media, hashtag KylieMeetJB. And I guess they found that and they decided to do something with that. So at first they showed me a video clip of Justin Bieber, like telling me that I was an inspiring person. And then after that, they asked me how I felt, and the whole crowd was like going crazy, like clapping and screaming. And I was looking around like, what is going on? And turns out Justin Bieber comes around with a big bouquet of flowers and surprises me on the set of The Doctors.
So wait a minute. Let me understand this. You're sitting in a TV studio on television, which is in and of itself a huge deal. And yeah, they show you a video of Justin talking to you. So the audience was seeing the video at the same time that you were. And so,
yes.
So that, and that was a surprise to you. And then,
And
then all of a sudden there's this guy handing you flowers who happens to be one of the more well-known people on the planet, Justin Bieber, live and in person.
Yeah. I was just shocked and excited to have the video. And then to actually have him come on the show was just incredible, because I had no idea. My family had no idea that they were going to put like this surprise together. And it was just really cool, because obviously I don't know about everybody else, but who doesn't love Justin Bieber? It was a really cool experience.
And it sounds like he was very warm and positive in his response to you.
Yes, he was. He actually whispered to me like something on the set, and he said, "I have a surprise for you." And I was like, "Okay, this is already a surprise enough. I don't know what else you're going to do." But he takes me backstage to his room and says that he would like to invite me over to his studio that night to kind of listen to his new album that he was putting out. And so I was like, "Oh, of course I'll go." But yeah, he invited us over to his studio, and we stayed there for a few hours, and it was just kind of like a normal hangout. It was really cool.
It just sounds extraordinary and would do so much to lift your spirits.
Oh, yeah. That was what my mom found so important in it, because she was kind of on edge about going in the first place. But once she realized that that had happened and that was probably going to really help me jumpstart a serious recovery, because I had been home for only a few weeks and I had been trying to get back on track and I wasn't even back in school yet. So it was really important for that jumpstart. And I think that's why my mom is so grateful for everything that happened there.
It's an extraordinary story and really wonderful that the show reached out to you in such a warm and gentle and loving way. You know, sometimes television shows can behave in ways that you're not too thrilled with, but this sounds like it was a wonderful experience.
Yeah, and that's what we were so surprised about, because we were nervous about going, mainly because we didn't know how this was going to go. None of us have ever even come close to being on a TV show. So going there was already a huge step out of our comfort zone, but it turned out to be a very good step.
It just sounds wonderful. Kylie, we're going to take a break, and we will be right back and hear more of Kylie Brookbank and burn survivor. Kylie Brookbank as a burn survivor and the co-author with her mom of a really important book, Beautiful Scars, A Life Redefined. We'll be right back. Kylie, I just want to remind the listeners that you're actually talking to us from school. You are in school and doing what college students do. So every now and then there's a little change in the sound, and I just want to let the listeners know what that's all about. And again, I'm just so appreciative that you're able to take time out from your busy school life to talk to us and to share your story. When you're home from the hospital and your friends are now coming around you, and post the Justin Bieber experience, did that change how any of your friends saw you or treated you, or did they celebrate that with you?
Mostly they celebrated it with me, but some people that I just went to school with that I knew of and they knew of me, they would make comments like, "Wow, that's so cool," which I agree it is, but it was just like they had never really cared about anything until Justin Bieber came into the picture.
I see.
So it was with my friends, it was a good thing because they thought, of course, they like him too. And they thought it was just a really cool thing. Same way I did.
Speaking of friends, when you're a teenager or a child, in your case, you were 16, and something really challenging happens, is there a particular way? A lot of times, friends don't know what to say to friends. Or they don't know if they should say anything. They will stay away or they'll come around like endlessly. Is there any guidance you can offer to children, to adolescents, and to parents of youngsters who may have a friend who's had a challenge? Is there anything that you think that they should do or be particularly aware of?
I don't know if it's something that they should do or if it's just something that would probably make the other person feel better, but I always felt really good knowing that my friends were just there. So a couple of nights in the hospital, my friends would come. Actually, they probably came all together like at least 7 days. And I always loved like my parents coming in and saying, hey, you have a visitor. It's like one of your friends from high school. I always thought that was really cool because not many people when you're 16 years old know, like, it's just, you're in a completely weird time in your life and you're kind of growing up, but you're also in the middle of it. So you're not sure how to act. And so I thought it was really cool that people my age cared enough to come and visit and send cards or just even like send my parents a message saying that they were thinking of me. I thought that was really cool. And it isn't something that people should do because you should want to do it on your own or you should like feel like, I don't know how to explain, but you should probably just to make the other person feel better. It really helps knowing that people are just there and supportive.
So those cards and calls, if one can receive calls and visits, those are really, really important aspects of the recovery.
Yes. And for me, it was because I wanted to get back to school and I wanted to still be connected with my friends. And I knew that the main way to do that was to be able to get better and recover. So that's what I did. And that really helped me with the friends thing. And even when I went back to school, I was still struggling. I was still having a hard time writing and stuff like that. So my friends were there and they helped me. And anytime that I needed them, they were there to help and like to open a drink or something. They were there. And that was important to have that support.
That's wonderful that you had that support. So here you are now, as I said a moment ago, you're actually back in school. You're doing what you do. What are you studying these days?
My major is communications. And right now I'm not sure what I want to do with that, but I'm hoping to figure that out soon. I just declared this year, so it's kind of new, but I'm liking where I'm at now. And I'm hoping to figure out the rest pretty soon.
That sounds like a reasonable plan. Tell us about, we were talking earlier about Shriners and about the extraordinary job they did with you, the work they did with you, and the care and support they offered to you and your family. What do you say to folks listening about Shriners?
I would say about Shriners that they're incredible and no matter what, you will never receive that kind of care in another hospital. And Shriners does things that nobody really recognizes. And that's why I'm kind of so passionate about telling people about Shriners, because even before this, before the accident and everything happened to me, I had no idea what Shriners was. I knew of a hospital in Cincinnati that was called Shriners, but I had no idea what they did and to what extent they do things. And I think it's amazing that they do completely donation-based care. And that is really important because even when I was there, I saw all kinds of families who could not pay, and they would tell you that. And some people had been asking my family for money and like saying that they really needed some just to get some food for their other children. And that was a really eye-opening thing for me, because donation-based sounds great, but when you see it in person and you see people who have literally lost everything, and yes, I know that I lost everything and so did my family, but we were able to recover and some people just aren't. And that's really why I am so passionate about Shriners, because everyone here is donation based and they're like, oh, that's awesome. And it is. And I'm glad that they realize that. But when you see it with your own eyes, it's just a completely life-changing event.
And you have said that you have felt compelled to really give back to Shriners. You credit them with saving your life.
Yeah, and I don't think that I would be here today. I don't know that I would be here at all, but if it were any other way and if I didn't go to Shriners, then I'm not sure that I would be in such good shape. And I credit that completely to Shriners and everything that they do, because they pushed me to get to where I am today. So from that, my mom and I decided that we should probably try and pay back, because they are donation based and we didn't have to pay anything. So we decided to start a golf tournament. And so far, we just had the golf tournament last month in August. So from to date, right now, we have raised over $170,000 for Shriners.
Wonderful.
Yeah. And we are actually presenting the check this weekend. And it's really important, because we know that they're donation based and we know that this money can help another person just like me, because their families aren't going to have to pay.
It really, you know, again, I mean, you know, in today's world in particular, you hear so much about rising medical costs and how things are just, you know, out of the reach of so many people in terms of receiving medical care. And the fact that you were there for 38 days, receiving multiple surgeries, having multiple clinicians attending to you and caring for you and providing housing, if you will, for your family at no cost. It really, you know, you just can't even really wrap your brain around it. And so absolutely, the fact that you've been able to raise so much, and I know we'll continue to do so on their behalf, and let people know the kind of work that Shriners does. Because a lot of times people, you know, they hear, well, yeah, there's that hospital and they do these things, but they don't really think about it in any real terms. And you're a real life living example of the kind of extraordinary miracles that happen at Shriners, my guess, is on a regular basis.
Oh, yeah. And that's the main reason why we do what we do, because so many people know of Shriners, but they don't know exactly what they do. And when you talk about another hospital or any other hospital besides Shriners, it's like, yes, they do amazing work, but when you see these kids who come from Shriners, it's just incredible, because they aren't normal kids. They aren't kids who have really no health issues. They have serious health issues and they don't look the same. And it's very, very eye-opening to see that, because they are different from just regular hospitals, and not for just one reason. It's for so many, just like the donation base and the family care unit and all those things. And that is what's so extraordinary about Shriners.
You just talked about kids who are leaving that hospital and their lives are different and they've got lots of stuff going on and they may not look the same and they may not even feel the same. You've had scars all over your body, and yes, you've had multiple skin grafts, but there are scars that still remain. How do you deal with that out in the world?
So I thought that it was going to be a kind of big deal for myself, but when I was in the hospital, they actually made me go out and have this like kind of like a mock day where you like go out into the real world for the first time since you've been in the hospital, because I was wearing things like bandages all over my body from like head to toe, and I wasn't even walking normally. I couldn't walk right. So that was kind of the first time that I was out in public, and there were stairs, and there still are stairs today, but I don't let it get to me. I kind of just I mean, I see my scars as something that I've been through and a story that I'm able to tell as many times as I can. And I see them as a good thing. They weren't at the time that it happened, but now they are because I'm here. And without them, I probably wouldn't be here. So I just ignore all the awkward stares and looks that I get and just go on about my life same way that I always would.
To those people who have a tendency, you know, there are people who do a couple of different kinds of staring. There are some folks who will just outright stare at you, make no bones about it. They're just staring. And then there are these other folks who really try to sort of sneak a stare. And, you know, it doesn't work. And I don't know. What do you want to say to those folks who get caught up in staring at someone who perhaps looks differently from them?
I get that they're curious, maybe. But I don't think, I mean, to me, it's not a huge deal because I know that people get curious. And if I saw somebody like myself and I'd never seen anything like that before, like scars, I would probably look too. But, the people who just stare completely, not even trying to hide it, or, you know, people who sometimes are just like, hey, what's wrong with you or something like that. That's just, I feel like that's crossing a line. And I mean, I don't let it get to me no matter what, but some people do. And some people in my situation might not take it as lightly as I do. So I would say probably try not to stare. And I don't know, it doesn't bother me as much as it probably bothers other people in my situation. So I don't know. I just think staring can sometimes be offensive for people.
I would think so. And you know, in today's world, well, this has been the case forever. Looks, you know, so many people are defined by how they look. You know, you talked about learning how to reapply makeup. Would you say that any of your friends have changed as a result? Are they treating you any differently as a result of what you've been through?
No, none of my friends have treated me any differently. And at first it was kind of hard because seeing them, they really had no idea what to say. And this was like after coming out of the hospital, I was still trying to be able to feel comfortable within myself. And I still was very uncomfortable, like scar wise and health wise. So them seeing me that way kind of confused them. So at first it was tough, but now it's completely normal and they treat me the same way that they always had before.
So at this point, you're having fun in school, can I hope?
Oh, yeah. I love college. So it's been very, very good to me. And I've been here for, this will be my second year. So it's been very fun. And I don't know, it's just, it's really exciting to be in college.
What would you say is some of the surprising things that you're discovering about being in college?
Not everyone can live with strangers.
Okay. Good observation.
Yeah. That was kind of one of the big things that I struggled with. But thankfully, that was last year. And this year, I'm on my own. So it's just really cool to be able to have the freedom. And I talked about freedom at 16 years old, but having freedom at college level is completely different than 16 years old because you don't live with your parents anymore. You don't have to have any type of rules. You do whatever you want. And it's kind of like finding yourself for the future because when you are graduated from college, you're going to have to be an adult. So it's really just, this is kind of the step in between growing up and becoming an adult. So it's really cool.
You know, for all the things that you've been through, there certainly has been a lot of attention paid to what happened to you and to how you're surviving. And you have a foundation and you just talked about the golf tournament. Do you ever find yourself feeling differently as a result of all the media attention that you've gotten over the years since this accident?
It was certainly overwhelming to think about myself being in like the media spotlight. And it still kind of is, just because I don't feel like I am a quote famous person, but so many people come up to me and they're like, oh my gosh, like you're famous. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But it doesn't feel like that myself. I like having the attention for certain reasons, but these reasons aren't because I want like my personal life invaded, because I still like to keep things separate. So, still to this day, it can be overwhelming. This week alone, I've had like news people come and stuff, and it's very overwhelming at times, but I know in the end that I'm doing it for a good cause. So I just keep trying to think positively in all aspects of that.
The idea of having sustained a trauma as significant as the one that you've gone through, and being able to talk about it and to really inspire and motivate others. Is there anything in particular you would like to say to those listening who perhaps are dealing with their own traumas?
The main reason why we like our book so much is because it can be related to people through all situations. And I mean, to people who are going through tough times, it's a very relatable story. And I'm maybe a little bit biased just because it's myself and my family, but I would say to people that if you just keep fighting and keep going through your life, that eventually good has to come out of it. It can't always be bad. And especially if you're fighting for whatever you're trying to get through, then it has to turn out good on the other side. And most people don't think about the other side of things or the end of the journey. And that's really important. And that's what I would say to do, is just try and think of the end of the journey, because if you think of that and you think about getting over the hump, then I don't know if it will eventually turn out well in the end.
Then you're kind of in a at least a better place.
Yeah.
Kylie, tell us how to get in touch with you or to learn more about the work that you're doing in the foundation.
Through foundation on Facebook, it's called Kylie Gives Back Foundation. And that's also, it's through a publishing company, which is called KICAM Publishing. And that's also on Facebook or on Twitter or Instagram. And then myself, I have Facebook and author page. It's called Kylie Brookbank Author. And then Twitter is Kylie Brookbank. So those are some ways that you can keep updated.
So there are lots of ways for people to be in touch.
Yes.
Kylie, I want to thank you again so much, taking time out of your busy school day and just out of your life to share this story with us. And again, to your entire family, they have done such an extraordinary job in supporting you. And I just want to say thank you to you and your entire family.
Yes, thank you for having me.
And folks, thank you for joining us today on this edition of Mind Talk. Mind Talk comes to you daily as an educational public service, and it is not intended to replace any work that you might choose to do with a licensed medical, mental health, or other professional. Mind Talk is available to you on demand by going to myndtalk.org. You can also download the free Mind Talk app from the iTunes or the Google Play Store. If you would like to be in touch with me, please send an email to Pamela, PAMELA, at mindtalk.org. And remember always, if it's unacceptable, it's unacceptable. You take care.